Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Aki and Purnell are here. How are you two doing?
I'm probably not here. Nope.
You're here. Deal with it.
You're clearly here.
This is the ghost of Christmas past. Duh.
Well, Christmas was months ago, so get back.
Hence Christmas past.
Give it a few months and we're all going to be replaced by AI. So,
yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
It's just going to yell out fucking yeah over and over again. They ain't going to be able to accomplish anything I got in here.
I mean, I legitimately probably could be replaced with an AI. I mean, you could probably replace me with Grok. As much as I hate that.
Gotta get more
God, we will never do
secret.
That. We will never, ever do that. Oh my God, that would be awful. That would be worse than saying unique a bunch.
Yes, it would.
And speaking of unique, we have a unique guest joining us this week from Fresh Brewed Games. We've got J-Rod Gingrich. How are you doing?
Evening, guys. What's new?
Hey-o.
Not much. It warmed up a little bit, but now they're calling for snow on Sunday, so I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Gotcha. They're only talking about like an inch or so, though, from what I could gather from my app. So it's not the nightmare from a couple weeks ago, which I hated it when it happened, but now I miss it. I want it back.
We still have piles of snow in front of our house that just won't go away yet.
Yeah, there are piles, but I can also see the filthy ground again. I don't want to see that. I want clear roads and obscured ground.
No grass yet. J-Rod, you said snowing out there. Where are you at?
Here in Southern Oregon, it's snowing. Finally, we've had a beautiful winter here in Oregon, but it's finally giving us a little of the white stuff.
I'm under the impression Oregon usually gets a fair bit of snow, doesn't it? Or do I have that misunderstood?
We did last year, but this year it's been remarkably warm, at least where I live. So I've been loving it. Great for my solar living off grid.
Oh, there it is. I talked to you about some solar living off grid. Shoot.
Hell yes. Down.
Yes, I need that for myself. But like, you know, I don't know, like, so wait, you were off, how many generators do you have to have out there for off the grid living?
I just have like a robust solar system. It's just me living the bachelor life. So I just have one unit and it has 8 lithium batteries and it powers my movie theater I got at my place. I'd say probably like 3 days without sun.
Oh my.
Or like
awesome.
A weekend for a fridge.
That's cool. Bonus for the movie theater.
I wish my dad knew how to use Discord because he's building a home in Kentucky right now. Like building his own home ground up from scratch. Him and like some friends and relatives and that's it. My dad's been doing construction like all his life. So he wanted to build his own home. He's going off the grid. He's getting solar panels set up. He's gotten generators up there. I'm excited to see it when it's done. This is like his dream project and he's finally ready to retire and disappear from humanity forever.
Well, clearly you got to put him on the horn with him.
Yeah, one set of my grandparents built their own house from scratch. And then my other grandparents, the one that I'm staying with right now, they're building their own camper thing, I think is what it's called, right? Camper?
Yes.
Yeah. And they're like doing all the electrical and stuff in it and have it set up with solar power as well. That's just cool. I don't get it.
So how long have you been off the grid? Like, what is it like living kind of in the middle of nowhere-ish? Are you kind of by yourself, or is it like a small community out there?
It's a small community I live in. It's a township of less than 500 people. I've been doing it for over five and a half years now. I moved here from San Diego and was looking for more of a slower pace of life, which I found, and I really enjoy it. The only big issue is if you want like internet here, it's like $800 to install Starlink or whatever, and then you have to pay like $200 a month. So I'm like, you know what? I just collect physical media. Like, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah, that works. Which leads us to your company, Fresh Brewed Games. You're a new physical publisher. Give us the info on what you do with Fresh Brewed Games.
Yeah, so I'm the owner, founder, and like game guru for Fresh Brewed Games. Our kind of like shtick, or you know, big focus here was original, beautiful steelbooks. I was heavily inspired by companies like Blue Fans or Blue Fanatics and Manta Lab in the film industry. They've really accomplished what they did with movies. And I tried bringing that same like extreme, you know, treatment of like artwork and respect for the physical media to video games. It's been really challenging. Our first year, we just couldn't really land many big IPs. So we did start out with two smaller IPs. But we're extremely, incredibly proud of what we delivered. And I think what we've been able to give to, you know, collectors and fans is pretty, you know, remarkable. And all things considered, with what we're trying to do and what resources we had, because for the game industry, it's pretty much just like your standard copy and maybe like a slip cover. We were trying to do like a little bit more than that, along with, you know, actually like doing original art. And we ran into like AA and AAA games. Like, well, we don't want to have to verify artwork that's probably better than the game cover art, but they just are too lazy. And I'd say a good example would have been Marvel Cosmic Invasion. We talked to Dot Emoon. I think it would have been best if they had went with us at least for the steelbook, because we were going to do a freelance professional comic book artist. And instead, they just went with like the game cover. And I'm like, they had so much potential for something better, but they're just like, we don't care. People buy this anyway.
Which is weird to hear that, too, because I feel like nowadays a large part of the physical contingent is collectors for the most part. So having that special flair of like a unique cover styling for your game, I feel like would give it more collector's value and make more people want it.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, dude, like that we can totally knock this out of the park. You know, the game's a great, you know, indie beat 'em up, and, you know, we'll just crush this. Oh, no, we'd just rather do our own thing. It's like, okay. You know, it's awesome. It's getting retail, and it's, you know, I want to say fairly priced for what you're getting. But again, it's going to be just, you know, the straightforward artwork, and probably very few do like more like detailing. You call it tooling, T-O-L-I-N-G. And that's where you can like inset the image or pull it out. Where both of ours, we pulled them out because I like embossing on covers. But, you know, being able to like add like depth to it, that's really cool. And it's sad that so many companies just overlook that.
I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, you don't see embossing on steelbooks often. It's usually just smooth metal. I mean, sometimes you're lucky if you even get a steelbook. Like, you might get a fucking metal pack or whatever the hell they are.
Yeah, the Mortal Kombat 1. Oh, my God. That was terrible. Metal pack is, like, the worst. Metal case, basically. It's like, really, guys?
I feel like you're going to snap the disc trying to pop the thing out, too. Ugh.
Yeah, and not having, like, the dedicated spine, that's why, like, you know, steelbook and steel cases, like, that's where it's at. Because people want to, you know what video game you're looking at, and I have to open it up to see the small little logo on the side.
Yeah, we want to see the panel with the game title. We don't want to see hinges.
Yes, and also, like, even if it does have a spine, we want to see the logo, because so many stuff, you know, Horizon, I think Forbidden West, the official one doesn't have one. It's like, really, guys, come on.
What games do you think should have had a steelbook but never did?
That's easy. My favorite game is MotorStorm, Pacific Rift. So if that game had one, Killzone 3 had one. Can't believe it did. But if MotorStorm had, I'd be all over PS3. If they'd even do like an analog 3D PS3, I'd be over that, because that was my, my game, my jam.
I haven't heard MotorStorm come up in quite a while, actually. I liked that game.
It was great. There's nothing like it anymore. I mean, closest we're going to have a new Star Wars pod racer, which actually looks pretty awesome, except like there's not a whole lot of like vehicles variety, but it does look awesome. Mm-hmm. It looks like MotorStorm with pod racers from Star Wars.
Well, with that, with that said, now it makes me wonder, out of genuine curiosity, what was your favorite? What was the most important aspect of MotorStorm that made it your favorite or one of your favorites?
For me, just the adrenaline rush. Like every time I booted it up, it was like just genuine excitement.
That is true. Damn.
Like you messed up in the game, like dude, like it was your fault. Like like the game was that great. You're like, get your ass back in the saddle. Let's do this.
I don't remember which one it was, but one of the MotorStorms came with that PlayStation 3D monitor they had.
Yeah, the MotorStorm Apocalypse 3D, that was badass
thing, and it was really neat having a friend over, and we each had a pair of glasses on, and we each had our own full screen of the game, but because
right,
it was displaying two images at once, I had mine, he had his, on the same screen. It was insane, like that
yeah
use of 3D technology is something that I think could have been utilized a lot better. And MotorStorm was one of the games that proved how well it could work.
Right.
And it looked good in 3D too.
Hell yeah.
I'm trying to make sure I'm remembering the right freaking game even before I put my foot in my mouth. But I'm not sure if it was MotorStorm, the franchise, or a specific one, but I remember MotorStorm as being a game that had a lot of different vehicle types and weather effects that kind of altered the track as you were playing it.
Yeah, like probably Pacific Rift or Arctic Edge. Arctic Edge was wintertime. Okay. Also, the launch title for MotorStorm 1 sold crazy good because of the mud tracks, like the Nevada desert, and you just like seeing the depth every time. Every different lap was different mud tracks.
Okay, so in that case, I wasn't off the mark then, because I remember being like, this is pretty freaking awesome. I like the idea that when games, like as you're playing through it, as the race changes, different effects occur to kind of alter what's happening. Some games will get away with it by stealthily being like, look, it's so different, but it's really just the same rotation every time you play the track. It just the first time or two, you don't realize it. But when they can truly get it right, where it just feels like you said, chaotic, and you don't know what to particularly expect or when it's going to happen, it adds so much value to your gameplay.
Definitely.
So shifting back to Steelbooks, loading up freshbrewedgames.store and you hit the About Us page brings up an awesome, awesome display of Steelbooks. Are those all official? Are they customs? Is it a mix? And
thank you.
Aki loved the Stellar Blade one.
For no particular reason whatsoever.
No, that's it's my personal collection, a good mix of both official and customs. There's my competitor that inspired me to get into the industry, Fantasy Box. They do tons of customs for TV show, like video game TV series, and then also video games. And I was like, you know what? If they can make, they make millions of dollars off like unlicensed steelbooks. I'm like, if they can do this, I can do this legally.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So how?
Yeah, and especially if you're making more of them like the Stellar Blade one, I think you do pretty damn good. There is a very specific audience for steelbooks like that, and it's usually for games like that, so that works real well.
Our future games we're looking at was Mad Jack Mallet and Chronos Event. Chronos Event I really liked because it reminded me of Blades of Time, a really quirky PS3 360 game, but had this hot protagonist, and she could rewind time like Prince of Persia style, and it was awesome because she could like infinite spawn her, so you could have like 15 little versions of you attacking one boss.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I was like, this is legit. Like, I loved it. And Chronos Event's trying to do that, have this, you know, an attractive female character in like a tight, like, bio-engineered suit. I hope it can stick the landing. Disorder came out back in 2025, and it really messed up, I think, because it was trying to compare itself to Stellar Blade, and it was done by two Korean devs. So everybody's like, it's the team version of Stellar Blade. I'm like, try and, I guess, do something more different. But it was...
Well, if I remember correctly, wasn't it like a pseudo-sequel to X-Blade or Cross-Blade?
Blade of Time was.
I switched the view on our Twitch stream to show my camera. I actually have the statue for X Blades on my shelf up behind me.
Ooh, nice.
I not only have the figure, but I have a still boxed figure as well from the collector edition.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. That is a risque statue. there is some ass showing on that one. And
they were marketing to.
The collector edition was rated T, for the game was rated T. The art book in the collector edition had full on topless nudity, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, that should have been rated E for everyone because it makes everyone feel better.
Right? Good thing ESRB didn't get their grubby mitts on it. They had been filing marks at them. Can't be showing that. Oh my god.
I think they got around it because it was a European version, like Peggy and whatever.
Oh, with Peggy, gotcha. Yeah, overseas they're cool with like booba. Here in the US it's like, oh, booba, it's gonna ruin the men. But here you can drugs, killing, violence, and mutilation. We're cool with that. Just booba, nope.
That's genuinely why I get a chuckle out of most of that stuff. I was like, so you're all good with the idea of like, well, I guess they get mature rating, but at least they come out in general. Like extremely violent, viscerally bloody games. Oh, yeah, just slap an adult rating or a mature rating on it. But, oh, don't show a breast. People can't handle that shit.
Yeah,
adults can't do it. I'll never understand that. Even if people were like personally against it, they'd have to acknowledge, like, to have one of those and not the other be available in a traditional adult, mature-rated game is absurd.
Right? I mean, if you look at a lot of the, pretty, quality films of the 90s, I mean, they used, female bodies to tell the stories with it. And, they knew their audience as adults. It's like, hey, these are, adult stories for human beings. That's, not shy away from reality. And it's sad, mm-hmm. kind of like the boxer industry is now like moved into where like they're, even afraid, like even Ratchet and Clank, the new one, like basically it looked like Ratchet, but with like a pink skin and female voice because they were too afraid to give her like boobs or make her look feminine. Like, really?
Yeah, it's sad that the internet is being sanitized for children when no one really wants internet kids on the internet. So it's like we're getting rid, because realistically the internet is made for advertisers now. They've taken it all over. They don't want kids on there because kids have, the thing called no money. But they also don't want adult content because that's not advertiser friendly. It's like, I hate it. So it's becoming so sanitized and so boring and so bland. And it's, so says the adult game player.
Hockey is our I'm totally specialist.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm totally with you. One of our first release, actually, Speed Llama, recently got banned for too much mature content. Sexy female llama and drugs geared towards kids, even though they're
what
not.
What game is this?
Our video game Speed Llama. It's actually recently been banned, and now it's become the internet's hot pocket sensation. Pixelated llamas fighting Nazi alpacas, and ESRB came back and said that they want to redo their rating from T to M, but they want us to pay to reprint everything, and I basically told them to fuck off.
Damn.
And you had a llama that was too sexy.
Yes. Let's see. In the video game, all she does is bend over and make kisses at you. There's nothing super sexual about her.
Wow. Okay, then.
Well, you sold it to Aki, at least, so there you go.
So, buy all of them.
That very much reminds me of back when, they changed some of the M&Ms and one of the newscasters is like, they're getting rid of the sexy M&M. I'm like, it's a sexy M&M? What?
You think one of them are sexy?
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, what? I mean, Yes, I understand that the green one is more feminine, but you think the M&M is sexy? What?
Well, I mean, that voluptuous chocolate candy shell. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Especially with the peanut butter. Oof.
Oh, peanut butter M&Ms are the best M&Ms. You are correct.
They absolutely are. Probably haven't made a peanut butter. Definitely, they did make a peanut butter and jelly M&M, but it was one of those stupid temporary ones they do.
And a peanut butter jelly one? I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that was a peanut butter and jelly M&M. Yeah, it was a PB&J M&M. But it was temporary because they don't know how to keep the good flavors around.
Got to give a quick shout out. Hazy JT just subbed for his 13-month, and we got a raid from Trivium Champ. Welcome in, everyone. We are chatting with J-Rod from Fresh Brewed Games. We are chatting about how Speedo Llama went from T rating to banned across the world.
Much of the world.
No more fighting back the Nazi alpacas. They don't want you seeing that. That's just too violent. We got to make sure kids know.
What can you do in this situation? Back when Grand Theft Auto got re-rated and back when Oblivion got re-rated, they just shipped out stickers that you could put on the case. Why can't they do that in this situation?
I mean, they might be able to do that from what the Daniel, the one rep for them, was telling me, that he wanted me to reprint everything. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm not going to reprint everything after I paid, you know, $15,000 minimum. You know, because the issue we had, I don't know if people understand, but like how specific and picky Sony was with our cover art. We spent like 3 months with freelance artists hiring them to get our art to be like CMYK because it wasn't pretty enough or black level enough to print. And I'm like, I want to focus on the steelbooks, not even the standard cover art. And it just, it's, you know, it's a whole process, and it's, I want to say, more challenging. Probably why, you know, lo and behold, why a lot of companies are moving away from, you know, even doing the physical. Like, we got that crappy Doom the Dark Ages with, you know, what is it, 25 gigs or megabytes on the disc. And it's like, well, it's not really even a physical. And now it's like, hey, you know, it's even cheaper, faster not to do it. And then also it upsets me. I don't know if you guys know, but like for a digital version of a game, it's like $50 to rate it. For the physical, it's like $3,000 plus to rate
it.
Rated?
Isn't that insane? Like, pricing discrepancy. And they're like, we're not hurting physical. I'm like, yes, you are. If a physical indie wants to just, like, you know, drop shot, a friend of mine's releasing this cool new game. I'm like, he wants to print it as a game. He's got to pay $3,000 minimum just for your logo. Like, that's not helping him. And like,
the teen rating on the corner of the box.
Yes. And then notwithstanding, they are so lazy at ESRB, they don't even review games. They watch a YouTube video and make a rating based off that. I'm like, shit, that's the best racket in the world. Watch YouTube videos and get paid thousands of dollars for it. Fuck.
Set me up.
Also, we don't want like a gore fest. We actually want you to like cut snippets and like little pieces of the game and show us like how it works. I'm like, just play the fucking game, bro. Come on.
Seriously.
Imagine them being like, that's one thing to be like, hey, we didn't get to play the entirety of the game, but what we play, it seems more like a, you know, a young adult's game. We can put that on there. And it's like, it's one thing to say that versus what, well, we watched the YouTube video, and the YouTube video didn't show any of the TNA that the game clearly has. You understand?
Yeah, once upon a time, they actually used to play through them incomplete for the most part. And then, you know, when games got bigger and bigger, they were like, yeah, can't be bothered to do that, so cut us snippets out. And now, actually, it has been a problem that other devs have even talked about, that, you know, they're not even wanting to play that. Instead, lots of them were like, tell us what's in your game. Show us a video of, like, what the worst in these categories are so we can determine it. It's like, you're doing nothing then.
Play the fucking game. Play the game.
Yeah, the game, exactly.
See why it is what it is. I don't know.
Yeah, because seeing, like, the most gratuitous nudity that's in it doesn't tell you about the game. Like, there's context. Context does matter. Like,
yeah, it
does.
Then again, given how many games release these days, is it even realistic for them to cover, to play every, like, we struggle to play a handful of games every week on this show. I don't know how someone could realistically play every release during a week,
even, play
if,
every
you
release,
have, even if you have a big staff. Like, there's
with that, play devil's advocate and say maybe play only the ones where they're doing the physical, because that's the ones where they're making thousands of dollars minimum.
Not just that, but I'd also assume that, unlike with our show, these are people doing the work full time, so they're being paid to do it 40 hours a week minimum. They can play a lot in that regard, at least enough to get a feel for what's in the content.
Exactly. If you got four big, I don't know, Ninja Gaiden or whatever, this, that, you just play each week, you know? But no, they'd rather just watch the video and make an assumption off that. That's why I think that AI should replace ESRB, because it'd also be a lot less biased.
It'd also be a lot dumber. And wouldn't understand its own ratings at that point. I think it needs people, but I think the people actually need to, you know, do the
people need to work,
do the job.
Yeah.
GTA, but I feel that way about E10 and the new SpongeBob's M.
I mean, if it's anything like what I posted, wherever the hell I posted this, in general, it should be mature for SpongeBob.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the store, the games that you have. It shows the PS4 version of Speedo-Llama is out of stock. Are you still able to sell the games you have? Or are you basically just doing, I got to get rid of these, so buy them now?
No, well, with all of our distribution partners have permanently pulled the game. We're selling, you know, what stock we have of the game in our warehouse. The PS4 standard has been like the most popular. We only printed 200 of that, so that's actually sold out. But we have plenty of the Steelbook version, because we have 800 of the Steelbook and then 200 of the standard, because we printed 2,000. So it's usually reversed. It's usually like 200 Steelbook and then a lot more of the standard. But when you go to print like Steelbooks, like their MLQ was 2,000 minimum, and that was even printing in China. So it was like a massive undertaking.
That's really cool. I like the little holofoil cards that come with them as well.
Yeah, right. Actually, having like little instruction manual with controller layouts is nice. Super nice.
Yep. What were the tariffs on getting that shit over? Jesus. Getting it all printed in China? Holy shit. The tariffs must have been insane on that.
Speedo-Llama was pretty cost effective. It was Project Tower came in 2025, and oh my god, we got like $2,000 just for delivery fee and tariffs. When like Speedo-Llama was like a couple $100 prior to, I don't know, their Trump or tariff thing, import fee.
And that's painful. Oof.
Yeah, especially for a small business like us, it was like a kick in the nuts. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, a big undertaking. And I'm also not a rich person. I'm using my life savings as a school bus driver. So it's trying to do a noble cause is something I'm passionate about. Not like I'm rich and I'm bored.
If they're suddenly choosing to re-rate you, they should be the one fronting that bill. Because, like, you've rated us. We paid to have it rated. You rated us. We got boxes. That costs money. And you're like, and now you suddenly want to re-rate us and you want us to repay for every. No, that's insanity.
That is.
I know.
That
especially
is not right.
So, but, you know, on the positive note, it's definitely the hot commodity right now. So anybody wants a copy, if you know, grab one. Because it'll be gone. Gone forever.
Tell us more about Project Tower. What is that game about? Steelbook on that one looks really cool. I might have to pick this one up myself.
Project Tower is an awesome game I was looking at. We're actually planning to go forward with Deadlink as our second SKU. Unfortunately, we just had like a falling out with a publisher. We met with them like at PAX, and then they told us yes 3 times, and then they told us no 3 times. And then I just kind of got tired of it. I'm like, dude, this is like a high school chick when you're dating them. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to move along. So we did. We went with Project Tower. I was actually developing a game because my background is in game development. A game about like Altered Beast, similar to this. So I was like, hey, I love Altered Beast. Project Tower has this badass morph mechanic where you can morph into aliens. I wish you could like keep all your morphs throughout the game, but you can only do one morph per level or per floor, whatever. But the game's really cool. I mean, it's made by a team of four people. Looks pretty good. I'd say it's almost like a PS3 character action game is kind of the expectations you should have. But it's, you know, a lot of fun. You know, it's about, you know, aliens take over the Earth and you have to fight your way back through it. It actually features cutscenes, which that's unheard of for indie games anymore. Everything's fucking walls of text. So that was another reason I, you know, it spoke to me. I was like, shit, I actually like get to experience the story instead of having to read it. Great. Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, that one looks really neat. The fun thing is if I picked it up, I still wouldn't be able to play it because I don't have a disc drive on my PlayStation.
Well, it'll be an ultra, you know, limited edition, whether it's the Steelbook or the standard.
I would probably go Steelbook if I were to pick it up.
Just add speed along the two.
I love Steelbooks.
I mean, they're a nice product to have. If you're going to have a physical game, it has a little bit of product.
A big shelf. I have a Blockbuster Video old display rack filled, like two shelves filled with old Steelbooks that don't have the game discs anymore.
Oh, from I forget what company that goes. They did awesome Steelbooks, but yeah, they only lasted like I think 9-10 months.
These are just random from different games over the years that I would get collector's editions for and then trade the disc in. But keep the steelbook because I don't want to give up my fucking steelbook. GameStop ain't getting like, that shit.
Right? Yeah, right? Here's your dollar, if that, for your steelbook.
Yeah, Joe's our local consumer whore. So
I used to be. I have severely cut down on my physical purchases, but I've been going nuts on digital lately.
So still a consumer whore, just a different type.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm at that stage in my life now where I have to pass this physical torch to the next generation because I've run out of space for physical shit. But that's what happens when you pretty much contribute a good chunk of your life to supporting that into that habit. I have a lot of games in this house.
I mean, anyone who has watched us on Twitch can see all the statues I have behind me. And that doesn't even include all the Assassin's Creed statues I have above our TV.
Damn. I've got a new statue of Demona from Gargoyles on order with Iron Studios. I'm pretty stoked about that.
Ooh, nice.
She's hot.
Yeah, that's an awesome cartoon back in the 90s that I think is often overlooked.
It's been actually coming up again for me recently, not for the world at large, but at least for me, largely because of Keith David, and also because I think there's been talk of like another run of a comic book, an extension of a comic book line for the story. So
yeah, they did land that. They recently did a comic book. I know at least 2024, 2025 got one for it.
Yeah, so Gargoyles is still very much the sweet spot, but I will say, as far as Disney afternoon cartoons go, they did get the short end of the stick.
Yeah. Like I'd wish Disney would put out like a, you know, even a physical like remastered, you know, 1080p, you know, physical release of it. I think that would, you know, bode well. They did their Disney Plus TV shows in steelbook form, and those were, I think, well received because they constantly sold out. So I'm not sure if they're just holding off. So far, they haven't announced any in several months, which kind of bummer. Cubs Andor was awesome, and I want to finish that officially.
I'm guessing you're big into movie and TV steelbooks as well?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I gotta just sell you all my stuff.
I probably won't have room. Right now I live in a shack, but I'm going to be upgrading to an official tiny house later this year.
Nice. Improvements are always well-liked.
The county's like, yeah, you can't have the shack here. Your neighbors are complaining about it. I'm like, dude, I live in Timbuktu. Who the fuck cares? Well, it's too long.
Who's your closest neighbor?
Down the road, some people. So I have like this bright neon vehicle truck because I was going to have a zebra business. That's a whole nother story. because it got killed. But yeah, so I have this neon vehicle.
That should be the primary story. What are you talking about? I was going to have a zebra business. Oh, that's something else.
Yeah, I was going to have that before my video game business. But my pet zebra got killed by a neighbor's dog. He got drunk for a week and forgot to feed his dogs. Well, they chewed out of their kennel and came over and had a $5,000 zebra steak.
Jesus.
Was that a lawsuit? Because it feels like that should be a lawsuit.
It was, yes. I did win it, but it was very tense. It was like two commissioners to one for yes versus no. But wow. I asked for double because you did have, I can't just walk down to Walmart and be like, I need a zebra. You got to go farm them, and they're halfway across the country. So I was like, yeah, I got to include all my gas expenses, relocation fees for it. They're like, ah, fine.
I didn't even know you could have a pet zebra.
Well, certain states, many states consider them like special or exotic, but Oregon treats them as equine, so basically like a standard horse.
That's really cool.
They're beautiful.
We're learning things on this show.
I had a baby boy Strafen up till they're like 6 months old. They're caramel, white and caramel instead of white and black, and ooh, they're beautiful as like little young zebra pups things.
Aww.
See, I have grown up on farms for a lot of my early life, and all I'm thinking is, the whole time we've been talking about this, all I'm thinking is, man, what did that zebra taste like? I'm jealous of that. Because I'm like, I kind of want to know what that tastes like. I bet that's delicious.
I'm just floored. You pivoted from raising zebras to physical gaming media. That's
physical gaming.
Yeah, that is a big, that's very a different turn. Jump there.
It's like, no, these animals, there's not a whole lot of stock in these critters now. Game! The physical game!
Well, that's the zebra's the gone. Fun. Steel books!
Right? That's two game belt llamas killing alpacas. Oh, sure, that'll be a good one.
Oh, mercy.
So what is next for Fresh Brewed Games? Do you have any titles in the works? Any future plans going on?
Sadly, at this time, we don't have any upcoming titles planned. We would like to, you know, keep on doing stuff. I'm not sure exactly because people have been asking what's going to happen with, you know, the ESRB situation. We are going to, you know, maintain our thing as we said here on the podcast and, you know, support our customers and fulfill orders. I don't know exactly how that will, you know, bode well with because they're like got their fingers wrapped around each other, them and Sony. So we could like essentially establish a new, you know, brand, but I'm not sure if logistically and also like time commitment wise I want to. So maybe we're, you know, building my new place, my new house, and then also working on other things. But in the meantime, I would say, you know, completing customer orders, that's been a big thing. Will these get shipped? And then also, you know, supporting physical media wherever we can. Because both of our releases were, as again, licensed. And we're also trying to help, you know, other developers get, you know, figure out how to navigate the physical pipeline. It's challenging, but we can definitely, like, help them with that. So I think that's an area that's underlooked a lot with devs or even indie publishers.
Are you familiar with the game Tangle Deep?
Never heard of it.
That was a good one.
It is. It is an RPG. It started off on Steam. I know they have a PS5 version. That might be one to pursue to see if you could get a physical version. Because I don't believe they have any kind of contract with any publishers because they self-published it on PlayStation.
It's an idea. We're looking at. There's been a lot on Kickstarter that has funded that. I don't know if like they just Volunteer Ascension was one that like they Kickstarted. They didn't have, you know, actual any partnerships and they offered the physical. So that's a, you know, an area we were looking into.
One of our chat members, Horror Acolyte, says they want a physical for Pathologic.
Sounds cool.
So what are some games that you'd be hoping to get some physicals for? Because now you got me wondering if there's any games I wouldn't mind grabbing a hold of as a result of that.
I'd say, well, let's go with indies. My top two is Majack Mallet. That is coming to PS5 finally, and that does deserve a great physical. I hope that they don't just do like a really cheap standard, but actually like do bigger. Second one, I'd say Chronos Event or Changer 7. It's an upcoming like stylish 3D hack and slash. Kind of like more kid friendly, but
Changer,
I dig it.
Changer 7?
Like Changer 7, Changer? Yeah. Like Changer 7. It's like a knockoff like Power Rangers. Look pretty cool. The devs are really, really dope. For, I'd say, like, Deboy, Tripoy. Definitely Metal Eden. I don't know how that doesn't have a physical. That game looked amazing. It was basically, like, PS5 of, like, Metroid.
It was an awesome game. I reviewed that.
Nice, yeah. I was like, where's the physical? And now I'm looking at my favorite genre is car combat. And Carmageddon Rogue Shift doesn't have a physical or anything planned. Same with Romeo's Dead. Like those
I reviewed Carmageddon as well.
Yeah, I bought Romeo's Dead recently specifically because I was like, oh, damn, if there's not going to be a physical, I may as well just pay for it like it is. But I would have
The digital. You know, physical.
Carmageddon, we talked with them. They actually said that a physical isn't off the table. They're just seeing if the demand is there first.
Gotcha. Well, I know there's, like, you know, I want to say, like, the limited print industry is, you know, interesting. There's new players, you know, overseas specifically, and then I don't know if you guys seen, I don't know if it's if they're related to Expedition 33, but it's called 33 Games is a brand new limited print publisher coming in 2026. So it'll be interesting to see what they do differently, because my whole spiel was, you know, steelbooks, that was our bread and butter. Like, nobody did those better than us. Like, hands down, I'll die on the hill fighting. But you know, the standard, man, I was like, whatever. Speed Llama, their devs actually made that cover, so that one's actual high res. Project Tower was like a low res screenshot we used, so it does look pretty janky, but it's got its quirkiness to it. I don't know if you can appreciate that.
Any thoughts on to doing Switch physicals?
What? Switch physicals?
Yeah, any
Switch physicals.
Yeah,
we wanted to. We actually, that was... They're actually the number one selling physical release is Switch One. But we just didn't get approved with Nintendo.
Mm.
So I don't know who you needed to blow or whoever. Whatever. We obviously didn't. Because, yeah, we didn't. We didn't even get approved. I kind of sucked.
Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for a while. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
Nothing specifically. I just, you know, I'm really happy to, you know, be on the show, share more about what we do. A lot of people didn't really know if, when I say Fresh Brew Games was legit, and then if, like, the game was getting banned was legit, I'm like, yeah, both is legit. So that people can rest assured. Then also just, you know, again, going back to, like, you know, we try doing something, I want to say, like, you know, just revolutionary, just different, you know, in the industry, you know, focusing on steelbooks and not, you know, standards very, very little. And I think, you know, what we did was pretty cool. And, you know, I think it would be great if we could have done it longer. Up until recently, you know, we basically were just running at like a net loss. So now we're actually making profit. So it'll be interesting to see if this continues and if, you know, what we could do, what we could change. Because one thing I was looking into for the future was the demand for standard was far surpassing steelbook. So looking at holographic covers, I think it only really LRG does those for like their like packs or their, you know, like their live in-person events. I think they're really cool. I don't own any personally, but I love, you know, holographic, you know, your standard editions. And yeah, I think that would have been something
I like holographic covers. You don't see those too often.
Yeah.
What about a slip cover with a lenticular slide, like the little 3D plastics?
That would be cool, I guess, if done right. I mean, it's so few, I want to say Meridian Games, they're one of the few it does like dedicated slip covers with most of the releases.
And there's so many companies out there, I can't keep track of all of them. I guess it helps that I'm more of an Xbox guy and nobody does physicals for Xbox.
yeah, that's the truth.
Even Limited Run has been pissing me off. Like, I can understand them not doing physical releases for their Xbox games, but the fact that they just don't even publish their games digital on Xbox really annoys me.
That's interesting, because I know they're working on a new He-Man game. I don't know if it's like original or if it's the carbon engine, but it looked pretty entertaining considering the new He-Man movie's coming out, and that looks awesome.
I have to look up more about the movie. I hear it looks pretty ridiculous, so.
It reminded me of Guardians of the Galaxy, and I love that movie, so I was like, I'm sold, day one.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give it a chance, at least.
Like, you know, they have that, like, you know, the group ensemble of, like, just mismatched characters. I'm like, yeah, this is Suicide Squad, you know, Guardians, I'm down. I mean, it's also, you know, we're looking at Jared Leto. It's exciting to see Jared Leto's face is covered, so that's awesome. I'm cool with him voicing it, whatever. And I think the outfits were pretty cool. I mean, obviously, was Man-at-Arms wasn't black in the comic book, but it's like, whatever. You know, it wasn't too big of an issue for me.
If I'm entertained, I'm entertained. I'm not going to sweat it.
Yeah, I mean, like, it looks entertaining, and it doesn't look like I watched Hasbro Snake Eyes. Oh, I hated that movie. I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan. Fucking hated that game. But I am looking forward to if I, you know, could ever get a AAA game. Snake Eyes stealth action game is being developed over on the East Coast. I would have killed to do the steelbook for that because fucking love Snake Eyes. And there are so many great AAA games like Stellar Blade, my competitor Fantasy Box, 5 unlicensed bootleg releases of that game all sold out.
Damn. I'm
like, that's why Stellar Blade should have had a steelbook, but no. You know,
people even Rise of Ronin.
Yeah, badass games that aren't getting steelbooks that are, you know, first party or big, you know, it's...
That's how they get
you. Did Astrobot? I wasn't a big... I know that came out.
In retrospect, that should have got a damn one, seeing how popular it ultimately became.
Yeah, I know, for like Game of the Year awards, that and Expedition 33, I was like, geez.
Well, 33, I think, did get the full Monty treatment. But just, if I remember correctly, it had a collector's edition that not a lot of people bought. Or rather, people bought it out, but then it became so popular. We got to reprint this thing. It's worth money.
Yeah, yeah, they reprinted that. Yeah, and then also the steelbooks was nice because that was like a wide release.
Yeah, they needed to reprint that collector's edition by like, I don't know, 10 times the quantity that they originally printed, bare minimum. I totally don't want one of those at all. Totally no, ever.
You can admit for that sure. You want things, Aki. It's okay.
No, I can't, because it's not okay, because it is so expensive.
Right. You buy more expensive Gunpla.
Rarely do I buy more expensive Gunpla. I just buy more Gunpla that become more expensive, because I buy more of them. There's a difference.
Well, there you go. Oh, man. J-Rod, it has been awesome having you on chatting with us. Where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
If you want to follow us, Freshbird Games on LinkedIn, Facebook. We don't really have a Twitter. We do have TikTok. That's actually doing remarkably well. Our intern worked hard on that. Also, if you know anybody in the Oregon area that wants to do a gaming internship and get paid to do it, definitely hit us up and apply. We are looking for another paid intern for our business. Our last Zach just crushed his goal and did awesome for his 10-week time with us. So
congratulations.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Zach. Yeah, being able to work with them. Like, I ran a video game studio. I was making a game, Smash Bros. Overwatch, and I had interns out the wazoo, never able to pay them. Now being able to pay an intern is pretty, really nice feeling, you know.
You hear to that.
All right. Aki, any last questions on your end?
No, I'm good. I think everything that I thought of was already answered, so.
Pernell, you got anything else?
No, I'm just glad that they're doing better. They're doing well enough that, like you say, he's able to pay interns and such now. And it also means that there's more room for them to grow, which means we'll be seeing more of their product in the near future for future releases.
Indeed.
Or definitely collaboration. I'd love to collaborate with some of the bigger... I want to say brands. It's just been such a challenge, like serious challenge.
I'll have to get you Andrew's email for Tangle Deep. If we can make something happen there, that'd be awesome. I'd buy that one too. Nice. Speaking of buying, you can go to freshbrewedgames.store and you could pick up the standard or steelbook editions of Project Tower on PS5. Speed of Llama on PS5 or the PS4 steelbook of Speed of Llama. J-Rod, it's been awesome having you on chatting with us. We are going to let you get going so we can move on with some reviews on the show. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Nope. I had an awesome time. Appreciate you guys. Definitely want to, you know, enjoy game preservation anytime you ever want to talk or just chat. Hit me up.
You know, hell yeah. We'd love to have you back. You were a fun chat.
You know, just keep gaming and keep, you know, living the spirit.
I won't be stopping that anytime soon, as long as I still can see.
As long as we got hands, baby, we're good.
Hell yeah. That's
right.
Like, Rob Hobson is like, I'm a software engineer.
Have the adaptive controller from Xbox. So you could, like, get the pedals and the buttons. And even if you don't have arms, we could get you playing games.
That was the Kinect. It was like, you get moving.
Let's not talk about the Kinect.
You're sweet bippy, we can.
All right, J-Rod, you have yourself a good night, and we will keep up to date with you and what you're doing, and hopefully we see more releases from you in the future, and we'll get you back on to chat again.
Appreciate it. You guys have an awesome week.
Take care.
You too. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye. Deuce.
That was a fun chat.
I would say so.
He was done dirty. That's
he was messed up. That is not cool at all. But
that's way too much money. Holy shit.
Yeah. Oh, we changed our rating. Reprint everything. No?
Yeah, that they
fuck yourself.
If they said this is your rating and then came back later and was like, we actually need to re-rate this, they need to be the ones to pay for it. Because that's on them. That isn't his fault. That's their fault. They rated it wrong, in their opinion.
No.
You can't just ask someone to eat all of that cost and just be okay with that. It's fucked up.
With that said, I totally get how they can sneak away with that, because, I mean, they're at the beck and call of what they want. It's like, hey, well, if you don't come to us, where else you going to go? And you can't do this without our rating your game. So,
yeah, lots of places outright will not sell your game if it is not rated by the SRB in the U.S. Anyways, lots of places refuse to sell it. So that they have a monopoly on what they are doing, and it's fucked up.
I am not a fan.
That's why a lot of boutique publishers, they just get PEGI ratings and sell European versions.
PEGI 12.
Yeah, which is fair, because I don't know if PEGI even requires you to pay to get rated. I think you just submit it.
Uh-huh.
But they can be finicky as shit, too. they're just as finicky. I've seen them put one rating and then be like, a little while later, actually, that's ratings wrong. We're making it this rating.
Speaking of ratings, we have a handful of games we got to rate tonight. Should we dive into these?
Can I just rate them all 10 out of 10s and be done with it?
We don't
remember that. I intentionally held off because of the interview, but I do need to go move my clothes to the drawer, so I do need to go do that.
It's Laundry Purnell again!
Laundry Purnell.
The secret is he never left. He never left. I just kept that shit down low.
Well, Purnell's first, so go do the laundry.
All right, I'll be back.
I mean, if need be, we can just make one of mine first. I don't mind that.
Nah, we gotta do Blaze Blue first. It's the big one of the week. That was a fun one. I put some time in that one myself. It is a really, really fun 2D action hack and slash roguelike. I am excited to hear what Purnell has to say about it.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed my time.
Yes, Blaze Blue is pretty cool. I'm not as into like the arcade fighting ones, but the rest of them look really cool.
Thing is, this one's not like all the Blaze Blue games are fighting games, and this is not a fighting game.
I think there's a couple that aren't fighting games, but yeah, majority of them are fighting games. Which makes me sad, because like all the ones that aren't fighting ones, they look cool. They look so cool. And I've yet to play them, and it makes me sad.
Ah, well. What are you gonna do?
Bitch and moan about it.
Yeah, I know. You do that a lot.
Yes, I do. It's one of the things I excel at, okay? Everyone has things they're good at, and that's what they should do. Mine's just bitching and complaining.
It is, and that's why we adore you on the show.
Are you sure adore is the right word, or is that just what you want to hit me in the face with?
No, no,
because I understand that.
Abhor.
Abhor, okay.
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, I had the wrong word.
That makes more sense, yeah, okay.
Well, what are you going to do?
Anything that involves any of you and me and the word adore is what you want to hit me in the head with, not how you feel about me.
Bree pops into chat to say bitch and complain.
Noise. Vin noise.
Love it. Love it. Love it. What are you playing this week? Like, what are you doing?
I am mostly working on a game I can't really talk too much about that involves a little green dude. Other than that, I've mostly been still working on
Darksiders. If the green dude is sticks, you're allowed to talk about it. We're just
not covering it. Okay, I've been playing the new sticks game. that's what a lot of my time's been on, is just getting through as much of that as I can, and occasionally popping into Assassin's Creed Shadows some more, just to every few days they give you some little missions you can do that give you some credits so you can buy some of their here buy this stuff with real money things, and I just do those, and that's basically all I do on that right now.
You want to hear something fucked up? I beat a game.
No, you don't lie to us. No, you didn't.
Not only did I beat a game, I 1K'd it. And it wasn't a $5 budget title.
Uh-huh, yeah, sure you did.
Dragon Spear, the latest Kemco RPG. I picked that up, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to give one of these a go. And I sat down and put 13 hours into it and 1K'd it.
You were able to beat it? 1K it in 13 hours even? What?
I mean, they're Kemco games. They're not 50-hour RPGs. They're mobile RPGs that get ported over to console. So they're
I always end up putting a lot of time into those and not beating it still. I think almost every last one of them I've played, I've put more hours into that and still haven't beaten it.
I mean,
apparently.
The trick is you got to use your stones to like get top tier equipment right at the beginning of the game. So you just fuck everything up and then do some grinding in dungeons. Like, you could set the battle rate of encounters, and I would set mine to double.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fair.
Or you could just initiate three battles in a row and do that.
Yeah.
It was fun. I had fun with it. I'm one of the few who really enjoys the retro Kemco games.
I think for me, it's just they put so many out so quickly that I got burnt out on them, because they're not bad. They're not necessarily my style of RPG personally, but just there were so many coming out so quick that it was like I just was. Because originally I was the one doing all the reviews of them until Chris took over them. And it was just like, it was just too many all at once. Like, I think I had like three of them in like the course of like 6 months to review. And I was like, that's just
that's actually not that many for Kemco. They usually are one a month.
Less than that. Okay, maybe it was five of them in 5 months then. I don't know, because I got like seven of them on here, and I was just like, I got burnt out, because I was like, there's just a bit too many of these, a bit too quickly for me. Like, if it was like once a year, I would probably like these a lot more, just because I wouldn't get burnt out on them.
I think the biggest issue is that they released so many X-Create games in a row that are very, very similar. When they mix it up with different developers on the games every month, it keeps it fresher. So like 1 month from Hit Point, 1 month from X-Create, 1 month from who does the Metro games? I don't know. But they have a handful of developers that they work with, and as long as they're like changing it up, I enjoy them.
Yeah, I think All the ones I was playing, I think, were all the like ones that were actually originally mobile, and they were just porting them over. So they were all from like the same creator, just in real quick succession. I was like, I can't.
Probably X-Create.
Probably. And I was just like, this is feels the same. It looks the same. It has a slightly different plot. I'm okay. Yeah. And I just... The more of it I got, the more I was like, I'm good. I'm good now. whereas, like, I've played other Kemco games that aren't those RPGs even, and I have a tendency to like them. So it's like, I know Kemco's good. It's just, I can't play a lot of the exact same thing over. Just like
the person who plays Ubisoft games nonstop.
Yeah, I was about to say, it'd be like if Ubisoft came out with a game every other month, no! I would eventually be like, I'm probably okay. so I like as much as I like Ubisoft games, there's a limit. There is a limit. And I do occasionally reach it, and then I'm just like, okay, whatever.
We just got a raid from Accidental Punch. Welcome in. We've got Lady Death 2K4, JT Hollis 07, Accidental Punch. Welcome in. What brings you to our little corner of the internets?
Bad choices.
Yeah, bad choice. Definitely bad choices. But since
that's
we're still waiting for Laundry Pernell to.
I'm back.
Oh, you're back.
How long have you been back?
Not that long. I just heard you talking about, I don't know, getting raided and something Aki was going to. Yeah, I'll just wait till they're done.
I was just
I've been back for like 10 minutes.
That's what I was hoping he was going to say with something like that. I was going to be like, you motherfucker.
I went back in time. Like I said, maybe like 2 minutes at the most. It wouldn't have been that long.
Accidental Punch just finished their podcast. And they wanted to pop in and see what we were chatting about. We had a chat with one of the guys at Fresh Brew Games talking about physical publishing and releasing games on PS5 and the joys of working with the ESRB. And now we are about to dive into, we got a 6-pack of reviews that we got to tackle tonight. And tell us a little bit about your podcast. What do you guys talk about on your show?
I really hope it's something about punching people. Because if it's not, grapefruit. I'm going to be very disappointed.
Accidentally various punching people. Our podcast is like when you're at a concert and you stretch a bit and you elbow someone. That's
how do you talk about nothing? At the very least, you guys should be a wrestling podcast or something.
We make fun of dumb people. Hey, grapefruit. That's us.
Yeah, I was about to say, so we're going to be made fun of on the next episode. Okay, well, that works.
Let us know when you talk about us on the show. There's just video evidence of how I got the name.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to have to check y'all out after we are done with ours and see what you guys get up to, because y'all sound fun. Nah,
make sure you catch a Thursday episode. That way you really know who to make fun of, because Jacob will be there.
Yeah. For the people who are new in here, we are Tuesdays and Thursdays, usually at 9 p.m. Eastern. We chat, we do news, we do reviews, we do developer interviews, all that kind of fun stuff.
We have a good time.
Do we?
Usually sleep deprived, but we have a good time.
Oh, man. Y'all ready for the review? Should we dive into these?
Sure,
yeah, we do. We got to get reasons. No, keep going.
I suddenly really want to use Six
Flags. First game to talk about tonight, Blaze Blue Entropy Effect X, developed by 91 Act, published by Astrolabe Games and 91 Act, released February 12th, Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $24.99. A roguelite action game set in the Blaze Blue universe featuring striking 2D visuals, stylish fast-paced combat, and precise responsive controls. Command a lineup of unique characters from the renowned Blaze Blue franchise and dive into an unparalleled action experience. Purnell, tell us about your time with Blaze Blue Entropy Effect X.
So, I'm not even going to go into the narrative. It's a very strange plot involving being a character named Ace who is supporting a bunch of scientists to dive into the sea of possibilities. That's the story. I don't know about it. I didn't care about it. But any excuse to get some roguelike action down, sign me up. And so long as the roguelike action is good, well, I have a product that I'm happy with. So what does that play out as? So during the game, the actual cycle before dealing with the upgrades and whatnot involves you, as the character Ace, diving into this aforementioned sea of possibilities. When you do so, you take on the form of an avatar because you see the sea of possibilities is all made up of data. So to do that, you have to engage it as an actual form of data in the made of an avatar. The avatars in this game are represented by characters from the Blaze Blue universe, plus a few extra characters that Arc System Works decided to just kind of come up with just for, you know, the fun of it all. But initially, you start out with the ability to unlock one of which is basically 25 characters. You choose that character, you indulge. And the game involves you exploring about six or so different biomes that you can't access them all at the start. And these biomes are broken up by a series of rooms. Each room, monsters will spawn in, and you have to use your attacks to take them out. Attacks take the form of attacks that you'd likely use in a Blaze Blue game. Now, they don't go as hard to the paint as if you were playing that game, so you're not doing like quarter circle punch or whatever nonsense to pull off your maneuvers. You have an attack button. You have a special attack button. Typically, the special attack button and the moves associated with it will drain your MP gauge. And your regular attack button will do, you know, physical attacks that don't really come at a detriment. And each character, despite the fact that there's only like two or three attack buttons in the game, they all perform very differently. And on the offset, you might find yourself going, wow, this is pretty freaking basic because my character's not doing a whole lot. He can punch and he can jump and he might have one special. And that's nothing great about that. Well, therein lies the rub there, Padre, because each time you complete a zone full of enemies by beating the stuffing out of them, sometimes you might get a special mission involving like defeating a certain number of enemies or surviving a certain amount of time or whatever. But whenever you complete one of these, you'll be given the choice of a reward, or you'll be given a reward. And then once that reward is chosen, you'll be choosing from a series of other potential rewards that you'll gain by going to the next room. So what kind of rewards are these? Well, the most notable one comes in the form of potentials. Potentials are upgrades to moves you already got or even unlocks of brand new moves you haven't accessed yet. So let's say, for example, your character is Noelle Vermillion. Noelle Vermillion was the character I chose when I started because I liked her the most in Blaze Blue on the offset with the two ridiculous guns. Once one of her potentials that I came to really like was basic revolver, was like a revolver attack where she could jump up from the ground and then shoot in both directions as after vaulting highward. Once I acquired that ability, her versatility improved and I was able to do more with her to progress through future biomes. In addition to getting these additional attacks, you can get the ability to expand on these attacks, so maybe extending their combo, maybe adding a new property to the attacks. And there's even some like sub-abilities that don't even have anything to do with your regular attacks. And there are a lot of these. And these are universal across all of the characters. These aren't associated specifically with the individual character you're playing as. They come in a form of like within like one of like eight or so different elements that exist in the game. And they have their own developmental trees as well. So you might get like the ability to produce a black hole when you do a certain attack. And then that black hole does X amount of damage. But later on, with another potential, you might be able to upgrade that black hole to become larger, suck in more enemies, and do more damage to them. And then in addition to time still, you might be able to get additional properties associated with it if they exist on the actual skill tree, which you can get a glimpse of by going into one of the menus of the game. Now, in the event you manage to get to the end of a level, you defeat the boss and move on to the next biome, you'll do it again and again until eventually you might get your ass beat and you're not going to be able to progress any further. At this point, you'll be ejected from the sea of possibilities. Your character, you'll be saving a sort of image of the avatar you were using when you died. And then you will go back to the main hub, engage with the NPC to be able to upgrade various stats or prospects. Like one character might let you just kind of look through like the item index or the index of moves and stuff to get you better acquainted with the game. One guy might let you do something like further advance and upgrade your ability to equip sub properties to your character. The more you level it up using the currency you get by beating monsters inside the actual dumb level itself, and so on and so forth. And eventually when you decide to dive back into the sea, sometimes you acquire the currency required to unlock another character, which is freaking great because you can get more characters to play with. But even in addition to that, once you choose a character and you happen to choose a character that's not the one you just used, you are able to equip the image you created from the last death you had, and that can be applied to giving that character a sort of starting edge in the next run. It's honestly a pretty cool system. And you can upgrade, you're going to get to eventually equip multiple of these, like up to three or so. So you can have a pretty well-built starting character just around the offset if you want to play your cards right. Now, with that said, when you decide to play that character again and die, you have the ability to either, I'm not sure if you can even like not save, not overwrite it, because I never chose to. I always chose to overwrite it, but basically you can overwrite it with a new image and equip that to other characters. So the way this is done is to incentivize you, A, to use more than one character, and B, to play with different styles of gameplay. That way you don't have three images that all have the same basic skills because you can't seem to stop getting the same progression skill path as you play through a level. Honestly, despite the fact that the narrative is pretty much a throwaway for me, I should also mention, like, as you complete certain levels of the game, you might get these crystals that will show you cinema snippets from like various elements, areas in the Blaze Blue universe. So if you care about Blaze Blue in that way, that'll be kind of nice for you to check out too. But again, despite the fact that I wasn't particularly excited about the narrative and I was not excited about it at the offset when I started playing the game, I can't deny the fact that it became a lot of fun. A 30-minute try of the game became a 3-hour run of the game because I just kept wanting to unlock more characters and acquiring more, you know, skill builds out and seeing how characters play. And more often than not, I would come across a character that seemed boring at the beginning, like S or ES or whatever her name was. She seemed boring, but once I started getting some upgrades on her, she became a freaking powerhouse, and it was awesome to fight monsters with her. I would say one of the only real gripes I have about the game as far as execution goes is, even though there are biomes and the biomes have different enemies, I wish there was more of an enemy variety to the game. And maybe that'll expand further in, because there's a lot of gameplay here that I have not gotten a chance to experience. But
there are, I would like for there so to be more enemy variety in the biomes too. Like the amount of replayability is crazy. Did you dabble in the online at all? Because I played with a rando and it felt smooth. It played well. I think it's something that you would be better off playing with a friend. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
One thing I would say is interesting about the online play, from what I could tell from the skill loadouts, is that there are various like modifiers to the gameplay that you can have, or debuffs in some respects, that only exist in multiplayer. So if you're playing online, there are debuffs that exist in the game that would only apply to multiplayer sessions. Like, for example, there was one I came across that I saw that said, if you and your partner are too far apart on the map, you'll start taking damage. So you have to get close together before you kill yourselves. So like weird stuff like that, where it's like, oh, that's a way to make the game a little extra scrappy. So I think the multiplayer would be pretty cool. I didn't get a chance to mess with it because, you know, I don't like playing with randos online. And I was a pretty late playing this when I got into it. But like, I think the game is pretty freaking cool. And it's funny because, you know the normal story with me. Like, I bought this on a PC back when it was like an early access and played a little bit of it, but then kind of bounced off for a little while. But then getting to play it on here on my TV and all that and sitting with it more thoroughly, I was like, oh, this is... They streamlined the gameplay a fair bit more as far as like the hub access goes. You just click between a bunch of avatars versus having to walk around a map. Like, I ain't worrying about that. I prefer what they did with this version of the game. That's for freaking sure. So I think this is a solid product. And if you're into action-packed roguelike games as opposed to like the methodical, you know, Sheeran the Wanderer style roguelike games, I think you're hitting it out of the park if you play this game. You're going to have a great time with it.
All right, well, it clocks in at $24.99 Give us your verdict on Blaze Blue Entropy Effect X.
This is a no-brainer buy. Easily worth your time, easily fun, with lots of replayability in the form of multiple characters to access and modifiers in the entropy zone, which I didn't even get into. But you'll see that for yourself when you play the freaking game. There's a lot going on here.
And if you are unsure, it is part of Game Pass Ultimate and Game Pass PC. So if you've got that, give it a download, give it a try, and see if it clicks with you. I can agree it's a good one, though.
Give it a try.
I gotta play it more. It's very, very fun. Next up, Dead Pets, a punk rock slice of life sim, developed by Triple Topping and Acupara Games, published by Acupara Games. Released February 6th on Steam for $14.99. Gordy and her punk band Dead Pets haven't hit it big, but they will any day now. Go to band practice, crush a diner shift, chat with friends, and manage Gordy's mess of a life. Unleash your inner demon in a feminist slice of life management light minigame heavy narrative rhythm game. That is a lot of qualifiers. Aki, Pernell, both of you covered this. Aki, start us off. What is Dead Pets?
Okay, in this, you play as Gordy, and he's hungover as shit, and she's part of this band that is totally gonna make it big. Totally. Yep, shit in one hand, dream in the other. Which one fills up first? And you are basically going throughout her day interacting with people, and every one of these interactions gives you pluses to some of her stats, we'll call it, and minuses to other ones. And these stats are, I guess, her emotional state, her band state, as well as her social state. So if she ends up, you know, being like, okay, I need to borrow money to help the band will go up. But she's also proving she's kind of useless as a person, apparently. So her social state drops. And it's the same for, doing things she doesn't necessarily like. Might sometimes increase some of her stats and decrease other stats. She, for instance, working at the fast food place where she does her shifts. You know, she might be employee of the year, but that's only because she's the only employee there. So you can choose to actually do a proper shift, or you can choose to flake out halfway through. She really doesn't have any interest in being there, so choosing to stay there lowers her motivation score, but it raises society. Yeah, so whilst you're doing all the talking bits and the decision-making...
Oh, hey, my microphone was off. Welcome in, Raiders.
Good job, Joe. Good job.
I muted to cough, and I forgot to unmute, so I'll have to...
Dork.
Whatever. Welcome in, Raiders. That is amazing. We have gotten a bunch of raids tonight. So how did you find us, Mako Douglas and crew? We are chatting about Dead Pets, a punk rock slice of life sim from Triple Topping and Acupara Games. Aki, what else is there to say about this one?
Okay, so while you're making these decisions that change your stats there, you're also playing little mini games, like going and taking part of your shift. You're actually playing something like a plate-up game. So you go, you grab a person, you bring them to a chair, you set them down, you wait for them to say what their order is, you bring the order to the table, and then you wait for it to be cooked and serve it to them. And that's the shift thing, and more people show up, so on and so forth. It gets to be kind of a pain in the ass, and you manage it as best as you can. And while you're doing this, you're also trying to bring your band up, because you just know you're going to hit it big, even though everyone else is like, uh-huh, yeah, sure we are, that's going to happen. And when you go and you practice your music, it turns into a rhythm game that Joe would really like, and I'm fucking miserable at.
Well, speaking of people who enjoy rhythm games, Pernell, what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I thought the rhythm game was pretty decent. It plays a lot like... what's that game that just came out? Muse Dash, for one, and it also plays a fair bit like Unbeatable, which is basically also something that plays like Muse Dash. But for me, the best way to play the rhythm game was to put it on hardest in the first place and go nuts with it, because if you put it on anything that isn't hardest difficulty, the it drops some of the beats on the rhythm to keep it easier. But if you're trying to follow the melody, you'll find yourself making more mistakes than if you just played the hard difficulty. So
I will keep that in mind. I will try it on hard then, because I suck at it, but I have no rhythm. So
this might be your time to shout.
It's
a great game.
This is a game for you, Joe. You would really like this game, I think.
Probably. I like a lot of games.
I like the music in it quite a bit, though, by the way. That's something worth just generally pointing out, and I'm sure that was very much deliberate on their part, and part of what made it part of the aesthetic choice is that the music in this game is very good.
Yes, it is. It is glorious. I actually really enjoyed the music.
And I also like how I believe, like, a lot of the choices you have to make as Gordy, even the ones where it's like, well, clearly, if you're trying to make this take off, you gotta make this choice. You gotta lie to make yourself look good or whatever. Many of these choices involve you draining what I consider to be your social battery, basically Gordy's personal stat. So there were more than a few times in the game where I had to make a decision specifically because I didn't want her battery to drain by way of me pushing the envelope to do the thing that I otherwise would have done. It's an interesting gameplay design choice. Did you have any situations where you were like, you know, I would have done that, but Gordy wouldn't have been very happy with me, or she's at rock bottom in her stats. I can't not do this. Oh, yeah.
The amount of times that I brought her to zero motivation and I went to go choose something, I'm like, yes, this is a perfect, correct answer. And then it was like, oh, that would lower a stat that can't be lowered anymore because it's at zero.
Yeah. Oh, it's like,
fuck
do that.
Me, I guess. That was the hard part of the game for me. Like, whilst I'm not good at rhythm on easy, I was kind of sort of managing it, but man, those choices, they go by kind of quickly, and it's so easy to not pay attention to how badly it's screwing your personal stats up that suddenly you're like, yes, this is the right choice, and then you can't make it, and it's like, oh no. Oh no, I don't like that other choice at all. Oh no.
I have no choice, though. The choice is taken away.
It's painful.
Speaking of choices, we all have choices in life, and we need to know if we should buy dead pets. It clocks in at $14.99. For those who are interested, you could get the soundtrack coming soon on Steam for $6.99. What do you two think of dead pets at $15?
I'll let you go first this time, Pernell.
I think dead pets is a fun time. It's a light sim in that you're not going to really be breaking your brain to make the right decisions and whatnot. But at the same time, the scenarios that takes place are fun. I like the music a lot. I like the little art piece vignettes that show up that kind of show off Gordy's train of thought when certain decisions or dialogue choices are made. So I would give this game a buy. I think it's fun and worth your time.
See, for me, I consider it a try it at the bare minimum. If you really like style of games like this, where it's, you know, you get a lot of little mini games and a whole bunch of, you know, conversation pieces, if that's your style of game, this is 100% a buy it for you, because it is really good. But for me, I think it was more of a try it for myself.
Definitely get that. All and right. That is true, too. I came at it from the lens of like, oh yeah, rhythm games, that's my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it is very not mine at all.
Understood.
All right, let's move on to Front Mission 3 Remake, developed by Megapixel Studio, published by Forever Entertainment, released January 30th, Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $34.99. Previously available on the Switch, Front Mission 3 Remake is a tactical RPG set in a future where nations and corporations compete for dominance in a world shaped by powerful mechs called Wanzers. The game follows two diverging storylines based on an early choice made by the protagonist. Both narratives focus on a global conspiracy involving secret weapons, corporate greed, and nationalistic agendas. Bernal, tell us about your time spent in the Wanzer.
Wanzer? Well, It's funny how, like, I had this game back when it was on release on the original PlayStation 1 way back in ancient times. And my feelings on this game have not changed, though I do feel as though they made a few improvements on this that might make it more, you know, digestible to players. But let's see where we go with this. So, again, this is one of those games where the plot didn't really sing too much with me. It involves it's a modern-day narrative involving characters that are caught up unexpectedly in some government conspiracies related to warring nations and usage of, you know, battle tech to do that and whatnot. And you're portraying this narrative through a series of battles that come sequentially one after another. As in, you don't have any player agency in regards to, there's no overworld to explore. There are no choices to make on, like, what's going to happen to go here versus going there for the most part. So if you're looking to have something like that where you go from town to town and have these experiences where you get to shop at different stores and talk to different people by walking into their buildings, I got to specify that, you're not getting that here. But you do get some nice gameplay in the form of the combat and also even in the customizations. So gameplay here involves you going from battle to battle, controlling robots called Wanzers, battling against other machines, also known as Wanzers, but then also other equipment and vehicles like tanks and helicopters and the like. Your Wanzer, it has health that's associated with the body on the Wanzer, as well as all the parts that are equipped to it.
You're saying, but your left arm,
I'm trying to be professional here. You have the left arm, your right arm, your legs, and your backpack, and also your head. Though at the same time, the backpack doesn't actually have health on it, but nonetheless, it's a body part, so I'm naming it anyway. These can all have items equipped to it, whether the arms have, you know, guns or brass knuckles, or which is kind of funny that a walking mech has brass knuckles, but I digress, because they're not brass, they're probably titanium. Or the backpack might have like a missile launcher and the like, and you can also upgrade the individual parts themselves to make them stronger or give them various properties if you can find the parts that have those properties to purchase and equip. When you get into a scuffle with an enemy in this game, you are using AP to both move around on the map and also to attack. And you use a certain amount of AP depending on the type of weapon you're using in said attack. When you perform your move, depending on which weapon type you're using, you will either target a specific body part or you'll do spread damage across a variety of the body parts on the Wanzer or the other devices that you might fight in the game. However, the one thing that's going to probably immediately piss a lot of people off is that you don't get to choose the target. You can choose the Wanzer target, sure, but you can't choose what part you're attacking when the scuffle's happening. If you see an enemy that's using a shield, you don't know if the enemy's going to pull up the shield or not, and you can't specifically target the shield or try to destroy it. You have to attack in hopes that the guy uses the shield so that you can hit it. It's weird like that. And also, it's doubly weird because you would think normally you would go, well, if I destroy the body, the whole mech's going to fall. So why would I waste all of my time attacking the arms when the body is the part that matters the most? And yeah, strategically, you might say because you can disable that mech part or whatever, but truth is, you don't get the choice regardless. You just have to go with what the game does and hope you get lucky. So that might piss some people off. Some people might like it because it adds a little bit of, you know, RNG to the combat. I'm fine with it either way, though there are times in the game where you kind of like, come on, I need this to connect. And then you hit the arm instead. Like, whoops, that didn't freaking help. If the legs are destroyed, your mech is unable to jump, and you also end up moving in spaces of one at a time. So you don't get your full range of motion. If your arms are destroyed, the weapon or defensive armament that's equipped to that is no longer usable. And if the body is destroyed, your pilot is forced to eject from the mech. And they're just a walking, you know, walking target on the map. That doesn't say that they're out of luck there, because if the mech hasn't been destroyed, sometimes you can get ejected and get back into it. Other times you might luck out and the opposing enemy unit might abandon their vehicle on the battlefield, and then you can get into that and commandeer it. That has happened a few times. But ultimately, combat can get scurried like that. Scurried. At the end of a battle, you will get ranked on how well you did in the level, and you will receive monetary rewards, or not monetary, but like a score and a medal associated with it. Leveling up your character in this game involves you actually destroying the mech parts I mentioned before in combat. You get medals based on that, so that might be incentive for you to hope that you destroy parts before the body, but I digress. When you're not in combat, you're on a menu where you are able to talk to people if they're around you at the time and the location you're in. Or you can go onto the internet. A feature that was pretty cool back in the day, and it's still kind of cool now, but my attention span is way worse than it used to be. So I've largely been having trouble focusing on it. But the internet in this game is, in all due honesty, a pretty cool feature. It is a simulation of an internet where they try to give you a visual to indicate you're going from various web pages. And then when you get to them, you'll get a splash along with the text associated with it. It's basically like old school GeoCities web pages. And they translate what it says on the pages and tells you in text at the bottom. You can follow links on these pages. Sometimes you can access secrets through these web pages, including having to locate hidden passwords either mentioned on websites or told to you by people at the bar, something if you talk to somebody at a location, which then unlocks various features for you sometimes, or just additional information for the world building of the game. Or simulations. You can unlock battle simulations that way too, because in this game, the only way to really grind, if you need to get stronger, is to go into battle simulations and perform combat. The ways in which grinding works, like I mentioned before, you get experience or you level up based on parts that you destroy and the like when you're in combat. But in addition, you also get what I just kind of call inspirations, where sometimes when you're in combat and you perform an action, your character might learn a passive ability, at which point the character will immediately use that passive ability in combat, and then you'll be given the option to equip it, so long as you have the skill point capacity to have it outfitted to your character. One of my favorite ones, for example, is Double Assault. I learned it by punching a guy with a pair of knuckles. Double Assault triggers sometimes. I only notice it triggering when I use knuckles, but when I do it, it lets me use both the right hand and the left hand weapon to attack, which is pretty freaking cool when it happens. But again, you have no control over when these things occur. It just happens when it happens. Good luck. And that's a lot of the RNGs of the game, too. Things that I think this game did well that I do appreciate, though, in retrospect, has got me wondering if the old version had it, and I forgot, but I'm pretty sure it didn't. You're able to kind of do like a speed feature where if you don't want to watch the Wanzers walk around on the map as you set their movements, you can just kind of trigger that and they'll just warp to the location you select them to go to, which isn't as visually appealing, but it sure is a time saver when you have a character who's got like two slow ass hulking legs trying to get from here to there. It's like, no, just warp over there. I don't care. They also have an instant battle feature in this game, which on the surface seems pretty cool. But the problem with that is it kind of skips all the details regarding how much damage was done across the parts and all too. There's something to be said about actually watching the damage bars trick down as your 12 bullet shotgun sprays the enemy, so you guys can see just exactly how much damage you did across what parameters. I honestly think the art is fine. It doesn't seem all that different from me, but at the same time, I haven't played Front Mission 3 in like 20 years, so I could be wrong there. But I think the game works just fine. It was fine for the time it was released in, and I think it's pretty cool now too. And even with the person who wasn't particularly cool about the dramatic aspects of the narrative, I do believe the character interactions can be pretty nifty to see play out. They have cool personalities associated with them, too. And as for the earlier mentioned split narrative that plays out, I didn't know about it when I first played it back in the day, but it did come up quickly because, you know, various magazines mentioned it. But here, it's pretty clear. I learned specifically when the split occurs. It's the very first question of the game when your friend's like, you want to go into town? That's the question. If you choose to go into town, you have one narrative that plays out. If you don't go into town, you have a completely different narrative that plays out. And I didn't realize it in this game until I went to save my first save file. And I was like, Emma's route. I was like, what? It already knows I'm on Emma's route? Wait, I thought, when did I make a choice? And I was like, oh, Jesus, are you kidding me? It was choosing whether to go into town or not. But there's your answer, Fishbulb. That's how you know what the choice is. But there, if you do end up getting into this game and you do end up liking it, there is a lot of game here because, again, there are two different routes, and there's a lot of gameplay to be had between those two routes. Some different characters that you'll come across that will join your party. Stuff that just takes place will be different. You'll be in different battles. The works. It's a good game. I thought it was good back in the 90s. I think it's good now.
Well, let's talk price on this. We got two things to talk about. First off is just the game. Clocks in $34.99. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not going to go into the price on that. Somebody's going to say what they want to say about it, but I think it's a buy it game. If you don't like it for that, just get it on sale. I don't care. But it is a good game, and I think it's worth buying.
Speaking of sales, they have a triple pack of Front Mission Remake 1, 2, and 3, normally $34.99 each. The bundle is $83.99, so you're saving $20 right there. But it is on sale right now for $55.99. So for $56, you get all three Front Missions.
I think that's a pretty decent deal. I mean, you just got to make sure you want a lot of Front Mission in your life. But, I mean, that's a good deal for them. And I know at least the second game is also good. I'm not too familiar with the first off the top of my head. I can't remember anymore. But I definitely remember playing the second remake for the show and liking it.
All right. Let's move on. Next up is Crystal Theater of Idols, developed by Vermilla Studios or Vermilla Studio. I don't know. Published by Blumhouse Games, released February 10th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $17.99. Crystal Theater of Idols is a gripping first-person horror action adventure set in the hunting world of Hispania, a nightmarish reimagining of Spain. Playing as Gabriel, a soldier who can use his own blood as a deadly weapon, you endeavor on a journey to fill the divine mission from the sun god. Aki, what is Crystal Theater of Idols?
Okay, I'm not going to get into the specifics of the story because most of those cutscenes are behind lots of flashing lights, so I don't know it. But you play as a guy who has been sent by the sun god to go stop another god, the sea god, from breaking out of his prison, I guess.
Hate to tell you, but you can't curse for this review.
Who am I going to murder? Who's the murder target here?
Horror,
I'm gonna hurt you. You're gonna get hurt, and I just want you to understand this. I almost cussed immediately.
I love when this gets redeemed because it breaks you.
Yes, because I do it without thinking. I don't have to think to cuss. I have to think very hard not to. So you're here at this place and your ship crashes, I think. You're woke up, you're injured, and you quickly find out the statues somehow, for some reason, are coming alive and killing people. And you also very quickly find out that your little dinky gun can't do anything to any of these statues. So you pray to the sun god, who is literally talking to you and giving you divine revelations. Not that I know what any of them are, because again, it's a seizure-inducing mess. And he ends up giving you the ability to every weapon you grab, it changes from whatever it normally is into a stun god variant. And that variant just happens to suck all the blood out of your body and to use it as ammunition. Woohoo! That's something. So, yeah, all of these weapons have lots of needles stabbing out of it all over the place that you just slam yourself into in order for it to suck your blood up and turn into bullets. And it actually does it in real time. So you actually have to pay attention to your health in this game because it does not automatically refill or anything. You have to find healing kits that you can inject yourself with blood. Or you are also given a special little ability by your sun god, and that's to absorb all of the dead things around you. You can absorb them and take in all of their blood to heal yourself as well. And in this game, you find lots of dead pigs, chickens, and occasionally some horses. The bigger they are, the more blood they have. Sometimes you can find... Nope, no zebras. Yeah. But there are occasionally people, and when you do it to people, they also, not only do they give you a bunch of blood to heal yourself, they also turn into items. Why? I don't know.
Oh, that was close. I know you were close there.
Yes, I was.
Just let it go. Let it happen.
Can't. I can't. It's a channel redemption.
It's a redeemed thing.
What'll happen if it does? What's the worst that could happen?
The timer gets reset.
Starts over. Yeah.
And I'm not going to continue doing this because I have an adult content game later. I have to be able to during
now
that.
You have literally to keep doing it because I want to see you try to review an adult game without the ability to swear.
I literally can't.
So Arnell, do you want her to murder you?
The perversions of these individuals are staggering.
No, God, no. So, yeah, these various statues have different weapons. Some of them, you know, have knives. Other has pitchforks. There's even a few that have explosives. I haven't found too many of those. But in order to prevent this sea god from getting out of its prison, you have to find four or five individuals that basically helped break the seal and get their blood in order to close the seal back. And that is a majority of what you're doing in this game, is just trying to find them in different areas of the map. It isn't something where you can just choose whoever you want. It is very linear, so you're not being like, oh, I'm going to go after this person just because they irritate me. They're all going to irritate you, but you're going to go after them one at a time. And throughout this, you have to deal with all the statues that are attacking you. Sometimes you have to deal with this giant statue that I don't actually know who they are. They're called Dolores, but I don't know who that is. And you can't kill that one, and it's huge, and it chases after you. So you have to like duck into buildings so it can't grab you and stuff, and that's kind of fun. Otherwise, you're just completing little puzzles to help figure out your way through this area. So in like one area, you have to figure out the combination to a safe. And for that, you have to look at all of the little domino games that are down on a different floor and figure out what all of the symbols on them mean so that you can go back up there and solve the puzzle that's part of this giant vault door. Man, I'm getting a headache now. So... Yeah, you do have a home base that you go to every time you complete an entire section of the game, basically. And in there, any of the other sun people that you find a corpse of, they turn into these little symbols that you can put into different chests to open them. So that's kind of interesting. The major problem I found with the game so far, realistically, is that once you're done with a section, you can't go back into it. And there's a lot of collectibles in this game. There's like three or four different types of collectibles. So if you didn't grab everything, you now have to replay the entire game from start to finish.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And guess what? Oh, only half. What? Oh, that's sub points. Okay. Suddenly a banner popped up and it said, halfway there. And I was like, oh, thank God, we're almost done with this I can't cuss thing. And then it said sub points. And I about cussed.
You just gotta get through the review. We're almost there.
Yeah. So yeah, I haven't finished this game yet, but there's all sorts of other creatures that you occasionally find, because this, again, is a sea god, so it's been turning its people, instead of just crazy people, it's also been turning them into, like, Innsmouth-style enemies, so they start getting more fishy appearances and stuff, and it's very interesting. And, like, some of the enemies, they can... Some of those types of enemies can, like, pop out of paintings and stuff. Why, I have absolutely no idea. It does not explain that, but it's cool. and yeah, otherwise, you know, it's just solving puzzles and finding items to help you solve puzzles. Like, oh, here's all these different mine carts that are in the way, and there are all these things that can be raised, but now you have to find the thing that allows you to twist something to raise them up. And oh, now that you've done that, you now have access to these couple of other areas, so you can go find new stuff and get to, you know, another secret area. Cool things like that. So yeah, it's pretty fun. You do have to be careful though, because literally when you refill your gun, it's not like, oh, this entire clip is this much of your health. No, you actually, every single bullet takes away some of your health. Just a little bit. Yeah, and you can see in each gun you have takes away a different amount too. Because like the pistol, I got it to where I got it some upgrades and that holds like 14 bullets, and that may take off like a chunk and a half, a pip and a half, I guess we'll call it. I don't know what you call it, because there's actual markers throughout your health. So you can see how many squares it takes. But then I have like a shotgun. It only holds 2 bullets. Well, guess what? That takes a lot of my health to refill that with just the 2 bullets. So yeah, you have to pay a lot of attention. Shotgun
takes more.
Yeah, but it is oh so glorious to use. So you really have to pay attention because, you know, if you're getting injured and stuff, that's also taking away your health. And if you're playing on a higher difficulty, you can kill yourself by filling up your ammo. In the lower difficulties, you can't. But in the hardest difficulty, yeah, you can accidentally kill yourself by refilling your ammo too much. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about price on this one. It is $18. What do you think?
Oh, this is totally worth it. I thought that this was an absolutely fantastic game. And I think a lot of people will really like it. As long as you like horror games and you don't mind a lots of dark environments, because this is there's a lot of dark areas in here. It's a really cool thing. And, you know, you don't see very many games where it's like you to refill your ammo, you're taking away your health. That was a really fun little cool mechanic. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Cool. Next up, The Prisoning, Fletcher's Quest, developed by Elden Pixels, published by Acclaim, released February 10th, Switch and Steam, $14.99. After a psychologist's visit goes terribly wrong, you find yourself trapped in the mind of a game dev on the brink of physical and emotional burnout during the final stages of an intense project. I wonder if they're speaking from experience on this one. Experience a Metroidvania light drenched in anxiety based on a very true story. Huh, called it. Pernell, what is The Prisoning, Fletcher's Quest?
I appreciate that they at least said a Metroidvania light, because that is definitely what this would be if Metroidvania anything. In this game, you play as Olaf, a character who, in his own mind, is trying to come to terms with some of the issues he's facing, and that issue dealing comes in the form of a 2D platformer. Right on the offset, he is teleported to the center of his mind space, as I'm going to call it, and you are immediately just kind of sent around to explore this place and engage with the entities that exist within the four rulers, per se, and pretty much defeat them. At the beginning of the game, you have access to the ability to jump and the ability to shoot your gun. And no clothing, because you're stark raving naked as you run around trying to get your bearings together. Eventually, you do get some clothing and your aforementioned gun, and then you are able to proceed with your quest, so to speak. As you progress through the level, you'll go from room to room. Every area is a single room, and you'll be tasked with taking out enemies, evading spiked floors, and so on and so forth. Defeating enemies in this game doesn't do anything. It's so much as just a means to an end to get away. So if you're really good at being a pacifist, you can probably avoid most of the enemies in this game with no issue whatsoever. And it also helps that you might do that early on, because at the beginning, your gun can only fire one bullet. So every shot that you fire needs to be extremely deliberate, because if you miss, you got to wait for the bullet to fall off the screen and then fire off another shot. Eventually, you'll come across one of the people that run your mind space or are plaguing your mind space, and you have to defeat them in a boss-related battle. These boss battles are honestly pretty fun, and I like the music that plays during the boss battles, too. In fact, I like the music across the entire game, so let's just get that out of the way. And once you end up beating that enemy, you will get a new traversal ability, which will likely be used to get to the next area in the game on the map. And that person that you defeated will go back to the shag pad to meet up with you later. If you go meet them at the shag pad, they will give you a new bullet for your gun, so then you'll be able to fire one more shot at a time. 2 bullets on the screen, 3 bullets on the screen, 4 bullets on the screen. And then you can explore again to find the next location to unlock and access. There are 3 different abilities you'll get in the game. And they're all pretty standard boilerplate. I'm not going to spoil what they are in case you want to be surprised. But they're all pretty standard boilerplate abilities. Eventually, you'll get to the final boss battle, defeat them. The game will be over. Bada bing, bada boom. I will say I beat the game in about 3 hours or so, give or take a little less than that. It does help that the game does have a pretty decent quick travel system or fast travel system, which is probably why I was able to do that as quickly as I did. There are food carts littered throughout the map, and if you come across one of these food carts, you will be able to warp to any ones that you've already visited. The other purpose of the food carts comes twofold. One, it's a respawn point when you die. And in addition to that, the way damage works in this game is you can only ever take two shots. Your character has a cowboy hat and clothing. The first shot knocks his hat off, and the last shot will kill him, and then he respawns back to the ramen shop. If you go back to that shop without a hat on, there's a vending machine that will dispense a new hat, and you can put it on to get that hit point back. One thing I really wish this game did do, or there's two things I wish it did. One, I wish for better enemy or a greater enemy variety. It's the second time this episode I said that. There are a number of different enemies that exist in the game, but in many respects, the enemies look different but perform the same as an old form of it. You have the naked man with glasses. You have the old scientist. You have the nerd with glasses. They all fire the same fireball, and they even all make the same sound. Same for some of the cannons in the game. Look differently. Now, this is a traditional, you know, old-style cannon. This is a space cannon, but they both fire cannonballs or fireballs or whatever in the same format. But then there's other fun enemies, like my favorite enemy being the walking tree that carries a lantern. And when you shoot the lantern, you can't kill the tree. But if you shoot the lantern, it sets the tree on fire and he starts screaming and running back and forth until he burns to death. And that's how he dies. I like that guy a lot. But I wish that there was more enemy variety, as in enemies that look different and behave differently. And the other thing is that as you're exploring this map, a lot of times in games like this, you're hoping to come across secrets as you come across a room that might be a dead end otherwise. In this game, the only things you'll ever stumble across are there's the occasional record. I think there's like five or six of them in the game. And if you find the record, there's a jukebox in the main hub where you can play music from the game. But you've already heard the music multiple times. But yeah, a little bit. And the other thing, which is kind of annoying, is you find hats. Not new, you know, cosmetic styled hats, but just that one HP I mentioned earlier. So why that's annoying is that one, if you're playing well, you're going to come across a room like, oh wow, what's in here? Oh, the hat that I don't need because I'm already wearing it. And then you'll just kind of be like, eh, I guess I'll keep looking for the actual goal of the game. And then the other thing about that is that sometimes you'll come across the room, you might have lost your health somewhere else and there's a hat over there. But to get the hat, you have to risk getting hit again anyway. So you're like, is it worth getting the hat, or am I better off just progressing in hopes of not getting hit again? Again, more often than not, I did just take my chances since the respawn was pretty generous in this game. But with that said, I felt like it was a little bit of a dejection to be like, oh, wow, I wonder what's in this room. Another hat. It is a hat. It'd be nice if there was like an additional like collectible in the game that you could acquire. You might hear me talking about this and going, oh, this guy must not like this game very much. And you'd be incorrect, because I cannot deny the fact that despite the few issues I did have with the game, I clearly enjoyed it enough to sit there and continue playing it all the way from beginning to end in one sitting. And despite the fact that I told you it was like 3 hours or so, oh, don't get it twisted. I would have totally shut this game down in 30 minutes if I didn't like it. I would not have cared. So with that said, I do believe this game is a fun time and a good way to, you know, to pass the time. But if you have very few Metroidvanias or Metroidvania lights that you haven't played yet, this is not the one to go to the top of the heap. But if you're looking for something fresh and you've played a couple and you're looking for something that you a little bit out of the ordinary, might be a quick shot in the arm, I can definitely recommend this game to you for that.
All right. Well, it clocks in at $15. What are your thoughts?
I do believe it is a try. This game does have selling points that make it fun. The writing is humorous. There's a lot of quirkiness to that. The music is good, but it is definitely short, which, again, is in the Metroidvania light, so not an issue there. And, again, I wish there was more to wow me about in regards to the things I stumbled across and found as I explored the mazes. But otherwise, it was fun. So definitely high and try it.
I do like the humor on the store page. They said to make sure this game will be a success, we asked three friends of ours, and at least one of them was excited. One didn't reply, and one said we should get real jobs and stop calling them.
Also, I'm glad you made that comment, because one other thing to mention is, without spoiling it, I think the credits in the game had me in stitches. So the credits are actually very cool in this game.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. George.
SML After Dark.
Fetish Locator S&M Studio, or how about SML Studio? Developed and published by Vinovella Games, released November 21st on Steam for $17.99. Fetish Locator S&ML Studio Season 1 is a brand new standalone sequel to Fetish Locator Trilogy, where you build your own adult film studio. Aki.
Me.
Go ahead.
Okay. So in this, you are playing as the same individual from the first three Fetish Locator games. And you and Stacy, your childhood friend now, thanks to, you know, all the issues Steam's had with adult content games, used to be your sister, have decided to create a porn studio. And this is sometime after the final game where you actually took down the Fetish Locator system that was blackmailing people. And you've decided, well, you know, after all of that stuff, the only thing I'm really good at is downward dicking people. So I guess that's just going to be my job from now on. So, yeah, this is all about you two trying to set up this rink-a-dink little shithole into a studio. This is going to be in multiple parts, just like Fetish Locator was, so it does not get fully finished in this game. I don't know how many in this series there's going to be, but you get to meet some of the people from the earlier games. Like, you get to meet Amy Rose, who was your actual childhood best friend, Lisa, who was a lawyer, and
Lisa,
Min, someone
I did not
that
hit her.
Yeah, and oh god, and then Mina, who is someone you can choose to romance. All the rest of the characters, I believe, are all brand new, even though some of them seem very familiar. I don't think you've seen them in any of those games. So, yeah, your sister is setting up all of the behind-the-scenes stuff, which means you're the one who has to go out and work and find people and bring them in to be co-stars of all of the videos you're planning to make. So you're doing all the groundwork while she gets to sit at home, and basically all she does is sit at home and look at porn on her computer, realistically speaking. And yeah, so you're meeting all of these different people, and the main focus of this game is S&M content. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's sadism and masochism, i.e. people who like to hurt people and people who like to get hurt. Yay. And yeah, so it's all about some rough sex, basically. That's the core plot of this game. Unlike all the prior games, though, this is not a visual novel, per se. It does have its visual novel moments, and you can make it a visual novel, but it's actually more of a dating sim-style game. So you go around, and you can visit lots of different places, and you can make money, increase different stats, so on and so forth. So you can meet people in different areas and at different times than other people who are playing the game. It does have three different modes you can play in, one that gives you access to literally everything, including some of the mini games that exist that aren't particularly hard or anything, but they do impact how much money you make, because they're all tied to the various jobs that you can do in-game. They're all really simple, like finding the fastest path to click a bunch of buttons that are around on the screen, which is for a the first job that you have, which is delivering hot dogs or sausages to people. And then, you know, you get like a pick'em, is it pick'ems? Crap, I don't know what the hell the name of this style of game is, but it's where you put like X's on a board because it tells you, oh, there's 3 out of 5 of these have X's on it, and you draw a picture. We've played those style of games on here before. I can't remember what they're called. Joe, you like them.
No.
Okay. fair enough, whatever. And stuff like that. So you get that, and then there's a mode that gives you everything but takes that stuff away, and then there's a full visual novel that takes away all the other stuff. The thing is, if you choose the full visual novel thing, you're not getting all of the content that you otherwise could have, because it's much more streamlined. That's kind of how this is for any game that's split like this. There's not a lot of games that are split between these two styles. Usually it's either one style or the other. So when you have both in the same game, you always notice that the visual novel only chunk has a lot less content in it. So it's really up to you which one you want. I obviously chose the one with everything because I want to see it all and do it all and get all the achievements because I'm an achievement whore. And yeah. Some of the meetings here can be pretty funny. For instance, one of the ladies you can meet, she dresses up as a evil clown at this horror place, and you and Stacy know about her because she's been making some specialty videos online in the same makeup. And you go there, and she's obviously staying frozen so she can, you know, scare you later. And the two of you start doing naughty stuff in front of her just to screw with her. And eventually she just tries to scare them, even though that's clearly not going to work. And you have 3 options. One of them is to run away, again, with your pants around your ankles. Hilarious. One is to nut immediately, which amuses her. She's like, what the hell? And the other is to fight where you actually suck her in the face.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it is hilarious. And obviously, because this is S&M, she clearly enjoys it. So it is very weird. So, you know, it's really fun if you're into BDSM. If you're really not into that stuff, I don't know how much you're going to really like this game or this series, to be quite frank. Because this isn't really vanilla stuff.
I kind of figured it wasn't with a title called S&M Studio.
Yeah, what about the fetish locator part?
Fetish yeah.
Yeah, not a lot of vanilla shit in this, which is why I like them. Because all this shit's fun. But yeah, you know, you get to meet people from, you know, IT tech fields to people working at the local theater, a cop, all of which you're, you know, trying to seduce and bring into the fold of your porn studio as you build it up.
Let's talk about the price. It is an $18 game. Give us your thoughts.
Oh, this is 100% worth it. This is a really funny game. Again, as long as you're into this stuff, if you do not like this kind of stuff, that you're gonna look at this immediately and you're gonna know whether you want it or not. So I think this is definitely worth buying. If you look at it and you're like, oh, this could be interesting, definitely get it. If you look at this and you clutch your pearls, then fuck off somewhere else.
Yeah, you heard that.
I don't like pearl clutchers.
That is the end of this episode. Big, big shout out to J-Rod for coming on, hanging out with us, chatting. Big thanks to you two for being here. Thanks to all the raids, the subs. Big thanks to Cheap Injustice, who just gifted me Mugenics on Steam. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Very much thanks. Wanted to check this one out. You are awesome. If there's a mod in chat, someone give Cheap Injustice a shout out. Music. I don't know what I'm going to play. I'll play something. How's that sound?
It works with me.
Well, we haven't heard it yet. How do we know how to say it?
You don't.
Dun, dun, dun.
You have a request?
Of course I do.
Anything with the word kink in it?
No.
Well, there you go.
Oh.
How about a song called Tainted Lovers?
Well, it has the word taint in it. I'll go with it.
I knew Pernell would
like that. Yeah, I know that game. Oh, yeah, buddy.
All right. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Tainted lover. What we See, are.
The perfect line would have been, ooh, get the woman.
Now, if you don't get to room in, that made perfect sense. The
beauty is exactly. A sin of God.
That's right. See, you know what I was doing.
Hell yeah.
What are y'all talking about?
Exactly. You're not in the know. You got to play the game, Aki. You got to know.
Yeah.